Welcome to Word Labs Out Loud, your weekly dose of creative writing inspiration on CFRC 101.9. Operating under the aegis of Kingston Literacy and Skills, Word Labs is focused on building a supportive, community-driven literary space that people can access across the calendar year. Our goal is to provide an inclusive, supportive space for people from all backgrounds to grow their writing skills, share their stories, and connect in a relaxed, judgment-free environment. Workshop instructors and facilitators from the local community provide participants with a breadth of teaching styles, class formats, subject matter, and perspectives. For our launch event, we invited a group of five local instructors to join us on stage for a relaxed conversation on the value of creative writing. For more information on the Word Labs program, to register for events, or to apply to be instructor yourself, please visit our website at www.wordlabs.ca. Today you'll hear part one of a wide-ranging conversation on the value of creative writing with authors and artists Adrian Michael Kelly, Eric McBay, Wilding, Bruce Kaufman, and Jermaine Marshall. Stay tuned for part two next week.
Everyone. All right, so starting broadly, how would each of you succinctly define the value of creative writing?
This feels like a dating show. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I think creative writing is just such an amazing outlet. And in my experience with creative writing, it's such a great way to bring people together. I mean, what a lot of people don't know about improv, and this is what I love about teaching improv and all the different lenses I can teach it through, is how it brings people together and how we're writing a story together in the moment. So, Aaron mentioned that I'm one half of an improv comedy duo and an education company. Every show that we do together, we're constantly nuancing the format and how we connect with you, the audience, and whether you're aware of it or not, that at the end of it, we've all written something together. So I really think that the power of creativity is how it brings people together. And I think, you know, the more and more I teach, especially since moving to Kingston, like, I don't know if it was just the timing of moving when I moved to Kingston, but community is so important and like bridging those gaps and bringing people together. And I think another amazing thing about how I experience creativity through improv is that it transcends all ages and, you know, wherever you're from, your background. And, you know, like this audience is a great example, right? Like some of you know each other, some of you don't. If this was an improv show or an improv workshop or a hybrid of the two, by the end you would all know each other in a different way, or know something about yourself that you didn't know. So I think there's always a creative vein through however I'm bringing community together, but definitely overarchingly creativity is going to do that, right? So I think that's what I like about it. And there's no ceiling to it either, so.
I admit part of where I find the value of creative writing is it's a great avenue for truth. I think one of the things that I oftentimes talk about is how going through law school, one of the things at the end of it that I really found interesting was how many people got to the end of law school and just understood, oh, this is the law, it's the law, versus others who are like, well, why is the law the law? And the law as a bit of a story, as a bit of a long-term creative writing project of its own. What kind of world are we creating through the rules, the things that we make, the stories that we tell? Because policies, I always say, policies are more people than they are paper. And so I think creative writing, which, again, in my mind, there's a lot that's creative writing. It helps you to understand your truth, what you feel about things and why. And the longer you go on in a collaborative creative writing process, the more you understand your truth juxtaposed against other truths. And you can make something new, beautiful, and creative through that process. But I also kind of like it because it's, and this is maybe the masochist in me, it's a difficult process. Mm-hmm. It is one that when done properly can bring as much joy as it can discomfort, which is also part of why I'm very excited about Word Labs, because I think it will be a great space in which to navigate some of those complexities. But to my colleagues, what do you think of creative writing? What's its value? Why should we do it?
Well, I'd like to pick up on that note of discomfort, because if you do commit to a writing life, whatever, that may mean, really. And I think there are lots of different kinds of writing lives. There are different ways to be a writer, different ways to be an artist. But that said, I do think that if you commit to a writing life, you're not necessarily committing to a life of ease. But as William James once said, what's wrong with a strenuous life? I think there's so much in the culture right now that militates against attentiveness, and it militates against mystery and complexity. Spend an evening on YouTube and find yourself rushing to make snap, knee-jerk, reflexive judgments about people, places, and things. And writing of necessity, if you're going to try to do it well, requires of you that you become, to paraphrase both James Wood and Henry James, a serious noticer, not to foreclose so quickly on the conversation, to keep paying attention. And I think that being a writer, it necessitates attentiveness, but it also increases, enriches, and enhances your attentiveness. And I think that ultimately the world and people are worth paying attention to. Life is worth living, and so for all of its strenuousness and all of its discomforts, and it will take you into very difficult places at times, there are also enormous rewards to the life, and there is a deep satisfaction to be had therein. And I think a deep sympathy to be discovered through the act of writing with other people, with the world, with the natural world, with things. They're all worth paying attention to.
For me, a lot of what I write is a response to things that are happening in the world. You know, I write both fiction and nonfiction. And I think I'm not alone in this room in feeling a lot of distress when I read the news every day. And it's becoming increasingly clear that we need to reimagine the way that our society works on some very fundamental levels if we want to have a livable future. And so for me, a lot of the power of creative writing comes from mobilizing what Stacy called the power of moral imagination. I think a lot about a book that Coretta Scott gave to Martin Luther King Jr. when they were courting. She gave him a book called Looking Backward, which was written by Edward Bellamy in 1887. It was a utopian science fiction novel from 1887. And he wrote about what the future could be like in the year 2000. This kind of utopian, like, peaceful socialist world of gender equality and racial harmony. And so, you know, I think about the years that both of them spent in the civil rights movement, and the idea that this book was on their bookshelf, the power of imagination to shape our society and movements even long after we're gone. I think it's so powerful. And it's also a way of engaging people more deeply. You know, you can. I think one of the reasons the news feels so hopeless is because they never provide solutions, right? And so it's like it really does get to be something like doom scrolling. But Edward Bellamy's book was the second book ever to sell 1 million copies. So there's a great hunger for genuinely imaginative stories that help us find better futures and better ways of living together.
And I'm going to share a valuable lesson that I just learned that never go last. How does one even compete with all
of that? We're not in a competition.
No, I don't imagine worlds of competition.
Collaborate.
Okay. But Era is going to have to pick one of the people to date.
And the rest will disappear into the floor or something.
That's okay. For me personally, creative writing, the value of it is that in the process, it takes you to a deeper level in your life. You discover things in your life that you can ultimately share if you choose to do so. For a lot of people, creative writing is a solo thing. It's writing in a journal. It takes you to another place. But on a societal level, also I think that because, well, on an individual level, it takes you deeper within yourself. On a societal level, more people, of all of the creative writing, you draw a deeper connection to people around you and also to the world around you, I believe. When there's more creative writing, that's what comes out of it.
That was really good.
Oh, thank you.
I was just going to jump off of tonight.
Yeah, absolutely.
What you said reminded me of something that James Baldwin, who I love James Baldwin, love him. Read his stuff, amazing. He once said about how, and I'm not going to remember this exactly, but we'll see. You think your pain and heartbreak are unprecedented in the history of the world, and then you read. It was reading that taught me that the very things that brought me the most pain were also the things that kept me connected to all those others in the world. And I think part of the point of, I guess, reading, and I was having a conversation with a friend of mine about this, is it's not just supposed to be like, oh, this has really enriched my understanding of things, like I know more now, but if the way that you think has been transformed or enlightened, then the way that you act should be as well. And I think sometimes, and again, going back to this idea of reading and writing, creative writing especially, as being a potentially uncomfortable process, is if you create these worlds, if you create these ways of engaging that you're like, oh, there is meaning and magic here, how then do you reconcile not reflecting it in your own day-to-day life? Because that's a tension that I find oftentimes comes up in the creative process. How do you folks navigate that tension in terms of creating these worlds and then reconciling not being in them yet and challenging yourself to try to create them in the present? Sorry, that wasn't on the list of questions, but...
It's a conversation. It's like additional questions
are welcome. I love that question. I think, you know, to that, I can't, you know, I don't have answers to all the questions that come up, but again, you know, when we're performing... And again, it's this call and response of the audience, right? So I sort of liken it to a game of ping pong in a way, right? So I hit the ball to the audience, they hit it back, and I feel like a lot of times what we're doing is we're creating, and again, it's writing without realizing it, and it's not necessarily pen to paper afterwards, but I was just watching one of our shows back the other night to find a clip for like a, you know, social media reel that I'm watching. Anyway. So I did notice that one thing that we're doing is creating a space where, you know, world issues and things that are happening need to be addressed, but we're not that we're making fun of them, but we're it's a light, more lighthearted
more approachable.
Way. More approachable. Yeah. It's more accessible to talk about it. You know, sometimes we just talk to the audience before we do anything to mine for, like, our material. And so, you know, what's happening is whoever's in the audience and whatever they want to talk about, we are finding something you said too, like especially what's happening in the world and how heavy the world feels, right? And we all need to know what's going on in the world and we all need to, but there is that. So I feel like I'm really blessed in that being a comedian and doing improv, that I can offer a vehicle that makes it lighter. We still have to
kind
address.
Kind of bridges the two.
Yeah, the gaps can be bridged. We can talk about things and we can... kind of a lot of times when you're struggling with something too, to act it out, to feel it out, put it on its feet. So that's what we're doing, right? So if the audience feels like collectively they want to talk about some of the heavier things that are happening in the world, we can recreate that in the moment and we can sort of control, so to speak, the narrative of how we're going to address it, right? And I think a lot of times you know, we need to talk about things, but
facilitation.
Yeah, facilitation, right? And everyone feeling safe, too. And so having like a broad sort of, again, I like an improv to like a pen, I teach it as like a pendulum swing, right? So it goes back and forth, but you want to keep it somewhere in the middle so that everyone feels safe, but we tend to not talk about heavy things. So I feel like my creative process allows us to, you know, like you said, it's accessible or digestible or more approachable, I think. Too. So that's kind of what I think we need more of, is more approachable ways to have those conversations. And that's why creative writing or any creative process lets you do that, I think.
I thought I saw, I'm just making sure I'm getting all the names. Eric, you were going to say something earlier.
Well, Eric writes a lot of sort of speculative fiction. Right?
I do, yeah.
And is it approachable and accessible?
I hope so. I hope so. I mean, I think for me, the kind of core answer to your question has to do with grounding fictional stories in the real world. and in the real issues that we face, right? So maybe it's like a totally imagined culture and maybe it's a different planet, but we can use that in some ways to explore issues of power or privilege or, you know, how people relate to each other. We can explore that in a way that's actually more truthful or more clear-eyed, because we can get rid of our own kind of personal bias or preconceptions and look at this.
Do you think it also adds, especially because you can go pretty big with the imaginative landscape that reflects your emotional landscape? So for instance, as a queer kid in Jamaica, when I was facing, you know, day-to-day queerphobia and just, again, just in as a element of the interactions of people, I couldn't like scream and like things would be flying around me, you know, like in Dragon Ball Z or something, some of the books are, you know, you read about like magic and your will doing things to the physical environment. But I did find that reading and writing, like writing some of the very dark poems I used to write back then, I was very, very emo, very goth, was a bit of like an outlet for that, going to that imaginative landscape for that escape, for that kind of holding.
Yeah, totally. It's a way to externalize some of the kind of internal feelings that aren't as obvious or that can't be expressed or that it's not clear how to express. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that we can take some of these kinds of fundamental lessons and apply them to many different genres. One of my favorite television shows of the last year was Andor. I don't know if anyone has seen that.
I just started to get caught up on Andor.
So Andor is a Star Wars.
Some good Star Wars stuff out the last couple of years.
Yeah, and you don't, for me, I'm like, okay, I love Star Wars when I was a kid, but it's not like deep literature. Whereas Andor is like,
keep going.
Andor, I think, is like the most interesting Star Wars project I've ever seen, because it draws on like anti-authoritarian, anti-fascist, anti-colonial movements. I can't describe it in this context, but I encourage everyone to watch it, because it is grounded in those real world events and real history. It has like a level of texture, and I think that, you know, for me, when I'm writing fiction, sometimes it's near future science fiction, and again, I try to reference the real world and make it part of the real world as much as possible. One of my novels, Kraken Calling, is like a dystopian novel that's partly set in 2051, and I got a call from a Queen's professor last year. They wanted me to come in and talk in their sociology class. They were using it as a textbook in their sociology class, because it mentioned all of these different movements, it kind of tied them in, and the professor said, like, the students don't like reading a giant 300, 400 page sociology textbook, it's really dry, but they'll eat this up, and then it like provokes all these interesting thoughts in them, and their like assignment, their creative writing assignment at the end of the semester, was to tell a story about a movement in the same way that people do in this novel. So I thought it was a fascinating way of kind of weaving creative writing into like the big issues that we face.
I also know that you had some a second tier of questions that I didn't distract from that.
I think it's wonderful, because a lot of the questions that I've been looking at are being interwoven into your responses. One thing I did want to ask, and Adrian, maybe I can ask you as a writer and also as a writing coach, how important is it for writers to find their voice? And how would you say, like, how can someone go about developing it? Does it have to start with imitation, or does it start with...
Yeah, I'm always respectfully skeptical when it comes to questions of finding a voice, because I believe that all of us are really, when we look at ourselves honestly, a repertoire of voices rather than a voice. That said, ultimately one has to settle on something in order to get something written, a voice to get something written, so a sort of persona. Unless you were to make a virtue out of your own multiplicity in the way that someone like Fernando Pessoa did, who self-consciously wrote under a series of what he called homonyms, or we might call pseudonyms, and actually adopted distinctly different poetic styles and prosaic styles as well while writing, and even would then adopt the persona of a critic who was reviewing a book by a that he had also written under the under another homonym. But
what was that name again?
Oh, Fernando Pessoa.
Thank you.
Yeah. he's a Portuguese writer. He's wonderful. But I just sort of went through this in connection with my memoir, and I found that as I was remembering different periods and phases of my life, that I would shift into a slightly different register as I was writing. And that wasn't bad. I mean, I suppose I could have written the memoir in a multiplicity of voices, but I wanted to be nicer to you, the reader, as well as to save my own sanity. So I settled upon a voice, which I was very candid about in a kind of epilogue to the memoir, saying, like, look, the memoir's called Maybe It's Me. This is not necessarily me as I want to represent myself now and forever. I had to settle on a voice in order to simply get this book written. It bears a family resemblance to me, but it's not necessarily me, because I'm not really sure that I believe in that thing that we like to call self-knowledge. I think that most forms of self-knowledge are actually forms of self-deception. And so I think that we actually need to be open, risky though it may be, to carrying within us, Walt Whitman famously said, of course, do I contradict myself? Very well, then I contradict myself. I am large, I contain multitudes. I think that it behooves a writer, and again, thinking now on the fly of Jonathan Keats and Negative Capability and the way in which he idolized Shakespeare, because he said Shakespeare never really had a voice. He was a multiplicity of voices, and he inhabited so many people, so many different people, so effectively. So I would think that it's important to hold within yourself a repertoire of voices, but at the same time, for the sake of getting a piece of writing done or a project done, settling on a voice that's going to work for that particular project. And a great way to do that is by journaling as honestly as you can and on a daily basis, preferably in an unguarded time. I do it first thing in the morning, and I mean first thing in the morning. I roll out of the bed, I walk to a chair, I sit down, and I journal for a while. And it's very difficult that early in the morning to lie to yourself. It's difficult to dissemble. My hand will come off the page when I don't want to confront a particular truth, or when I think I'm not being intelligent enough or pretty enough or elegant enough first thing in the morning. But I put the pen back on the page and I keep going. And then after a significant amount of time has gone by, I go back and I reread those journals in as detached a way as I can. And it's not about product. Almost nothing of what gets written in those journals ends up in a published book. But it is a very effective means by which to confront the reality of your own voice and to stop imitating other voices. Which isn't a bad thing, by the way. I think most writers probably begin by imitating their heroes and their models. And certainly I did that for many years to my great detriment. I discovered that, for instance, The English Patient had already been written. And it was called The English Patient. And it really didn't work as The English Patient Goes to Edmonton. But it got me started, you know. And eventually I sort of fell out of trying to imitate those dreamy sentence fragments that Ondaatje is so good at writing.
Anyone else want to add? Jermaine, you're contemplating deeply.
I think redeveloping a voice, or rather your voice or voices, write reviews of things that you engage with. You don't have to publish them necessarily, but you watched a show, you've gone to a movie, a parade, a concert, something you've engaged with, write a review about it. you know, you can use a conventional star system, but like write something narrative. Say, you know, here's what I think about it, here's why, you know, I wish they had done this differently, here's why I think they should have done it differently. Because I find that for me, something that really got me to get a sense of my own voice was me growing up in opposition to a lot of things, but also having to often voice my opposition to those things or write them down. And be like, well, that didn't make sense because. So I didn't keep a journal in that conventional sense, but I do talk to myself a lot. I'm in constant conversation with me. And oftentimes having to go through those processes of just like, I didn't like this, and here are all the reasons why I didn't like this, or all the aspects of it that I didn't like, oh, I wish it had been different in this way. To add some positivity, you can also review things positively, so if you really enjoyed it, you can also indicate that. And then if you're interested, after you've done that, go and find other reviews of the thing, and see how your mind moves through those other reviews. Do you agree? Do you disagree? Then go back to your original review and see if you change anything. I think that's something that, at least as an exercise process, gets you thinking about what you think about things and why you think those things about things, and what happens when your thoughts start to encounter other thoughts about the thing that you just did. If you want to get really, really fun and creative with it, talk to your friends and family if you've shared that experience with them, and get their thoughts and listen from a vantage point of not necessarily trying to, I guess, be right, but to, again, see how you respond when kind of engaging in that moment. Because I think your voice gets stimulated in that process. At least that was my experience. How about you, Bruce? How did you find your voice as a creative?
I think it's just about what you guys have already discussed. So I think reading is important. Mm-hmm. I think that, like you said, imitation might be the way that a lot of people get started. But I was going to look it up because I thought I might actually use the quote tonight, but I forgot to look up who said it. But we have this common theme that imitation is the greatest form of flattery. Sincerest form of flattery. But this poet said imitation is suicide. And really it is, because you've given up finding your voice if you're just simply imitating someone else. But I think that workshops encourage people to stretch themselves a little bit and find their voice, they're nudged or decide to look at things a little bit differently. And also in reading, not just reading things that we're familiar with or things that we particularly like, but to stretch ourselves that way as well, to again not imitate, but to realize the fullness of language and what can be done that you may not even have noticed before, wouldn't have known about if you hadn't explored a little bit. So,
well, I think it's fitting too that your radio show is called Finding a Voice, because it implies that it's a process. It's not something that happens overnight.
Kingston's a vibrant city. There are things going on all the time. I try to record as many book launch events and writing events.
Stay tuned next week for the continuation of this conversation on the value of creative writing. I've been your host, Ara McCauley, and this is Word Labs Out Loud.